Up next on Teaching Gwinnett, digital learning. What is it and how does it work? A district leader stops by to provide answers. We also talk to some teachers about the creative and innovative ways they are using technology to reach and teach the district's more than 180,000 students. And another edition of Did You Know? All that's next on Teaching Gwinnett. Welcome to Teaching Gwinnett, a Gwinnett County Public Schools podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Watson, and I'm here with another great show for you. Today, we're going to talk about digital learning, how it works, what it has allowed us to do, and some of the creative ways teachers are using it to educate and keep students engaged. My first guest is Dr. Jonathan Patterson, Gwinnett County Public Schools Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction. Dr. Patterson, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Bernard. I appreciate being here and the opportunity to share. Appreciate what you're doing.
My first question I have to ask you is, how are you and your family doing?
We're doing very well. I'm very fortunate. Everybody's healthy and staying safe and my wife's a teacher, so she's been able to continue teaching, and both my sons are able to continue learning.
So how has it been for your wife being at home with the kids while also trying to fulfill her duties as a teacher?
Well, I think it's different for probably every family, depending on each of their children. For us, I've got a 10th grader, so he's independent. He's able to log on. He's able to do his assignments. And my wife's able to log on pretty early. She starts about 7 and then goes pretty late till about 7 with her classes. So the biggest thing is they both miss school. They both miss the social piece and being able to talk to their teachers one-on-one, to be able to have that interaction and that discussion piece. It's just nothing, there's no substitute to a real live teacher in a classroom with the other students in the room.
Unlike most GCPS employees, you haven't worked from home. You've continued to go into district headquarters. How has that been?
Obviously, being safe as we come in and practicing social distancing, it's, at first I think, you're a little bit scared, but then as you come in to the building and the protocols that we have in place, it's really provided a lot of security to me as I go about my day. And so business is different here, but we've been able to do things a little different, but again, every day we've been here and been working collaboratively to support our teachers.
Dr. Patterson, for those that don't know, can you explain what e-class is and how it relates to digital learning?
Yes. So e-class stands for Digital Content Learning Assessment and Support System. A lot of people don't know what that means. So that's, again, Digital Content Learning Assessment and Support System. And it's really about transforming instruction. It's never been about the technology, but it's how can we have a digital online classroom set up for students where learning doesn't stop when students leave the classroom. So that was the inception of it. And we partnered with an LMS, a learning management system called Desire to Learn, and we were able to set up each teacher with their own digital classroom where students can come in. It's a one-stop shop for them to be able to continue their learning and expand it beyond the four walls of the classroom.
We're talking about a school district with more than 180,000 students. How is the district able to provide all those students access to the portal all at the same time?
That's a great question, and there's a lot of people working behind the scenes to support this, and we've been fortunate to have really good leadership from our district level as well as the teachers. Our TAC, our Teacher Advisory Committee, was really persistent with the administration about trying to substitute a snow day for a digital learning day. They wanted to try that. And boy, did that really help us out to be able to do a traditional snow day and continue learning using digital learning. So the first day, several years ago, didn't go so well. We had problems with the technology. We had problems with the assignments. we had all sorts of really challenges. But it worked well enough for us to try it again. And that's where we really refined the process. We worked with our partners, our vendors, to ensure that they could handle the load. We, you know, you have to sort of remind folks that we've got 180,000 students and another 20,000 employees that are going to have to be on at a specific time. So it was a challenge. And the things that we've done to really help mitigate that, and let me give you an example, is that the amount of work that went into teachers being able to share their course pages with other teachers. So let's just say that I'm a special ed teacher and you're the regular ed teacher. A lot of work had to be done where I have access to your course page and I can go in and support students in that class and make sure that I have set up the rights to do that, where you're able to share that with me, and I'm able to support students at a greater degree. So those are those little tiny things that made a big difference in ensuring that this works. We do monitor. We've got a whole dashboard that we look at, and we can see at what level response rate our students are having from, and we're averaging between 1 second response rate, which is really good. But there's always potential issues that if a vendor changes something on the background or makes some upgrade, those are the things that we constantly monitor and manage so that our students don't have a disruption in their learning.
So it sounds like this is a system made up of different programs from various vendors working together to provide students with educational resources.
Correct. E-Class is a gateway to other programs. We have our digital textbooks through E-Class. And so once you go into E-Class, you're actually going into D2L. But then if you can go through Safari, the routing actually goes to Safari, or you go through a digital textbook, it goes to the digital textbooks, which really helps us in so many ways because it balances the load on our system, and you don't have everybody trying to go through the same door at the same time. If you can imagine getting on the highway all at the same time and trying to manage that process of getting on, that's a real challenge. And even if the highway is already slammed, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to be stuck. And you're going to see, you're not going to be able to get on the highway, you're not going to be able to get off the highway, and that's where you're going to see that spinning piece on your device, which we've seen in the past and we've been able to mitigate. But what's been a blessing with this experience is that from the first day that we went on, we've had a pretty smooth experience throughout. We've had a couple of glitches, but those glitches are really like 2 to 3 seconds delayed versus a 1 second delay.
GCPS is known to be a data-driven school district. So what is the data telling us about when students are logging in and doing their work?
Most that have been on is around 12:20 in the afternoon, and maybe that says something about our students' sleep patterns as they've transitioned to digital learning. But that's our peak generally every day between 12:15 and 12:30, and we on average around 80,000 folks at one time. And then you can go from every point during the day from 2 o'clock in the morning on, you're still talking about thousands of folks that are on. Our actual lowest point of in terms of usage is around 4:30 in the morning. So we don't have as many early risers, if you can imagine. We have a lot of students on at 2 a.m. in the morning, but by 4 o'clock, it's pretty quiet.
What percentage of the school district's more than 180,000 students have been logging into the system?
At the first week, we're at 97% of our students that were using our portal, and 95% that are actually going through D2L. So we felt very good about that, those numbers. And the reason why we want to look at it at a weekly pattern, because we do have students that are sharing devices. They're having to potentially go to a location, maybe get internet. So there's lots of different figures that we use. But 97 on a weekly basis, it kind of comes down to about 94, 95 using D2L. And then on a daily basis, we're at around 83 to 85%. And so you can see how that extra 12%, 13% sort of range between one day, which is at 83%, to really about 95 to 97% throughout the week, we capture those students.
So how is the district addressing the issue of students who aren't logging into the system and doing their work?
Our teachers and our schools, to kind of dive into that a little bit more, Bernard, they've reached out to every student, and they know who's on. We have some really great reporting tools that says that you or I have not logged on. And so our counselors, our teachers, our principals, our parapros, our clerks have contacted every student to know whether or not, if they've logged on, what the problem is. And that's been really helpful to ensure that we mitigate those access problems. So if we know that a student isn't logging on and we know why, we can go out there and try to give them a Chromebook, or try to give them information about where to find internet. So we've roughly have 10,000 families that have we've reached out to, that have, we've given them a device, a Chromebook. We're being very creative where we can and trying to deliver that those Chromebooks as quickly as we can. As I talked to a principal at Nesbitt yesterday, and they gave out over 300 Chromebooks to their students just in one school. And we know there's around 3,500 families that have or need internet. You know, we're looking at the access as a long-term problem, specifically with internet access, and working with our partners, AT&T, Verizon, others, to try to see what can be done to offer families internet. We still have students that have not consistently don't log on, that we're concerned for, and we're looking at all sorts of methods of trying to connect with those students. During the school day, in a traditional school, we usually know someone who knows the family, and we can say, hey, have you heard from Jonathan? I've tried to contact him. This number's disconnected. But that's a little bit harder in this environment, so we have to use a lot of social media to try to find those few families that we've lost track of.
So is that what you would say has been the biggest challenge with digital learning?
I think it's phases. In the first phase, I would say yes, getting Chromebooks out into the hands of students, identifying those families who needed a Chromebook or needed internet. Now it's in a little different phase, is that we're starting to see a little fatigue with families, and how do we keep those students motivated to continue on the school year? And so that's one of the reasons why we chose to continue teaching throughout the 180 days, that we've continued to teach new content, that we've continued to grade. All of those decisions were purposeful, because we didn't want students to be able to opt out of the learning and just take the grade on March 12th or March 13th and not continue to learn. So for us, it was a little bit simple. It's like, do we want to have students continue to learn, or do we not want students to continue to learn? And so once we made the decision we do want students to continue to learn, everything else sort of fell into place. But right now we typically see a spring issues that happen with students, and we're, again, nothing's different on the digital front. We're seeing that those issues that happen in the spring, where students get fatigued and they're not wanting to finish assignments. And some students, Bernard, they really need, or a lot of students, they really need a teacher that can prod them to finish that assignment, turn in that work. And when they're at home, different family situations sometimes limits us to our ability to kind of reach in and get that assignment out of a book bag and say, here's that assignment, let's finish that up and turn it in for a grade.
So the question has to be asked, will students be prepared when they return to school in the fall, or whenever that is?
That question really drove our decision to continue learning, because we knew we didn't have time in the calendar next year to go back and reteach everything that we taught this last 9 weeks during digital learning. So we know we're going to have to go back and reteach some concepts, but we wanted to make sure that students were prepared, because as your audience knows, is that next year, the expectations for third grade are still the expectations for third grade, or the expectations for ninth grade are still the expectations for ninth grade. And so we're not going to be able to go back and teach algebra when you're going back in, when you're starting geometry next year. It's just not enough runway to do that. So we wanted to continue that and make sure that students are prepared for the next grade level and they're prepared for those accountability measures at the end of next year, like the milestones or end of course assessments that we know will be important for students to do well on.
Based on everything you have seen and experienced over the last couple of months, what has the school district learned about its digital learning platform?
What ended up being really beneficial to us is to practice before we had to play. And what I mean by that is, are those digital learning days that we had for snow days were incredibly important for us to be able to do what we've done. Our teachers have pulled this through. There's no doubt that our teachers and our principals have really made this a successful initiative, and we've been able to continue learning at pretty high levels, quality and effective instruction at high levels this time. And if it wasn't for them, we wouldn't be able to do it. And the tools have worked very well for us. So I believe that we're going to have more digital learning days built in, not even replacing just traditional days and not having just to use them for weather days. So I think that's going to be one thing that we really see. The other piece that I see as a benefit is the amount of collaboration that's happening between teachers is really, it's hard to describe, Bernard. What we're seeing is that when we typically had a digital learning day, there are some assignments that teachers would have that are easy to do digitally, and they would use those assignments. And then the next day, they knew the students would be in front of them, and they could catch up, and they could do some other assignments. Well, that's not the case now. Every assignment's got to be digital. And so there wasn't a time where you knew you were going to have your students later face-to-face that you could catch up. So what we've seen is this really sharing of lessons. Just in math alone, we have developed over 350 assessments. 350 different lessons that people are using, that they're sharing. So the variability of what students are experiencing from one end of the county to the other end of the county, from one point socioeconomically to the other point, has really changed dramatically. And so that's the other thing that I think that will continue and that we'll have to nurture and make sure it does continue.
We know that no system is perfect, and there certainly have been some problems. But overall, is it accurate to say that the IT department has done a phenomenal job keeping the system operational and accessible to students?
Well, I'm so appreciative to our IT colleagues who consistently watch how our systems are operating. Every day, I mentioned the dashboard, and someone's there watching that at all times, and we get alerts when something's not working. We had an issue with some servers for Safari, and our folks were on it very quickly. We were able to reach out to the vendor. They were able to change some things, and so quickly we went from having an experience that wasn't the best to quickly addressing that and getting students back into that environment. So these are the quiet heroes that you don't always see behind those teachers that are making this work.
As useful and effective as digital learning has been, can we say that it's better than having a teacher in a classroom engaging with students face to face?
Absolutely not. I mean, there's a reason why homeschool and you know, our online campus has small enrollments. We know that students are this transfer of knowledge that happens in the classroom and happens digitally is just a small part of what's happening in a school. It's the social emotional piece that students are missing. It's the clubs, it's the activities, it's the sports, it's their coaches, it's this whole connection that we feel between each other that we're really missing. And I do think that some students have had such a positive experience with digital learning that we will see an uptick in our Gwinnett Online campus numbers, but I don't see that growing much, because I know students are ready to be back in school. Teachers miss their students, and they want to see and be with their kids. So, no, I mean, this it's effective, but nothing's a good substitute than a good face-to-face teacher.
Given what you just said, can you see a day when K-12 schooling takes place exclusively online?
I can't see that. I do think that 3 years ago, if this pandemic had happened, we would have had to shut down school, because we couldn't have done what we're doing right now. So this has been a blessing that we're in the place that we're at, that we're able to take advantage of the technology and continue learning. So yes, I do think that this provided us an opportunity to see and benefit from this, and we can build some of that in and be more creative now that we know what we know. The transformation that's happened in the classroom cannot be undone through this process. So there's huge benefits that we've received, but nothing's going to really take the place of a school and students coming in and gathering together in a classroom and building that culture in a classroom that stimulates not only this intellectual growth, but that social and emotional growth too.
Dr. Patterson, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. But sit tight. We're not done with you quite yet. We're going to bring you back at the end of the show for another edition of Did You Know? But before all that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we return, we'll check in with a couple of teachers and discuss what it's been like teaching during this pandemic and some of the creative ways they are using the district's digital platform to engage students and become more effective educators. All that is coming up after the break. And now, an important message from the CDC.
The best way to protect yourself from 2019 novel coronavirus is to avoid being exposed to the virus. Additionally, there are preventative actions that you can take to protect yourself and your family from the spread of respiratory viruses that can make you sick. These include: stay home if you're sick, cover your cough, and wash your hands.
We're back. My next guests on Teaching Gwinnett are what I would call two educational warriors: Monica Gassman, a first grade teacher at Woodward Mills Elementary School, and Nakia Manning, a 12th grade literature and composition teacher at Central Gwinnett High School. Both of these educators, like their peers, have been working hard the last couple of months teaching students remotely while at home, surrounded by their children, spouses, extended family, and even pets. Now, that's not an easy thing to do. Monica and Nakia, welcome. Monica, I'll start with you. How are you and your family?
We're doing well. My husband is also a teacher at Mountain View High School, and my daughter is in first grade at my school, and it works out nicely because I'm a first grade teacher, so I know exactly what is expected of her. And then we also have a three-year-old. The three-year-old we usually have to entertain somehow while we're all trying to work, but we try and balance taking breaks so that we can do some fun things together as well, and especially during this beautiful weather that we've been having.
Nakia, what about you? I think you told me you have three children. So how are you handling doing your job while being surrounded by your kids?
It's been both rewarding and challenging. I think the most rewarding part is the time that we get to spend together. Teaching high school, I have to leave the house so early in the morning that I really don't get to engage with my students and talk to them until, you know, later in the day after I pick them up from daycare and we're doing homework or sitting around the table. So the wonderful part is that, you know, we get to spend a lot more time together. But my husband and I definitely had to come up with a schedule to make sure that the students could get in enough of their study time and everybody gets equal amounts of time. And then my husband, who's a coach, he also does their PE classes with them several days a week to make sure that they're getting fresh air and exercise. And, you know, and then being able to do things like take walks, go for a drive, maybe barbecue, like Monica said, with this great weather. That's been amazing.
So it sounds like for both of you, it requires a team effort to make all that work.
Definitely.
Yes, absolutely.
So I have to ask, have you had any problems or have there been any situations where you are trying to get something done or you're in the middle of something and one of your children or a pet gets in the way and you've had to say, hold on, everybody, let me take care of this?
My 3-year-old has joined me on many class meetings.
Yes.
With my students, and they love seeing her because they hear stories about her all the time anyway. And then before this, I had an SST meeting, and she joined us in that, and she just, like, sang hi, and then she usually goes. Yeah. My 6-year-old that's in first grade loves seeing the teachers through Zoom when I have my own Zoom meeting. She likes to step in and say hi. But then they both know that this is a time where mommy has to meet. I can't be mommy right now. I have to be Mrs. Gassman. And so they have learned to respect that and have done surprisingly well.
Yes, I would echo exactly what Monica says. Every now and then, you know, they'll want to pop in just to say hello. They're curious. Mm-hmm. You know, who are these people that you're talking to? Where are they? How many are there? My daughter once saw me in our faculty meeting with, you know, 160 other people in Google Meet, and she was just fascinated by all of the squares that were on the screen. But they're very respectful. You know, they just may poke their head in and then go on about their business. We don't have any pets that require immediate attention. I think, you know, every now and then, you know, we have to redirect someone to make sure that they're doing something nice and quiet. If I am preoccupied and you don't need a whole lot of support right now, but it's been manageable.
What do you miss most about not teaching in the classroom?
Oh my gosh, probably seeing my students on a routine basis. I teach seniors and I just miss that interaction with both the students as well as the colleagues. So, you know, I have to work a little harder to make sure that I'm still getting that interaction. But, you know, planning out the lessons, I just try to make sure that I give opportunities throughout the week so that students can check in. But it's not the same as when, you know, they're held hostage in the class for 93 minutes and, you know, they can't go anywhere. You know, right now, that interaction is mainly voluntary and in accordance with what they're capable of doing. So that's been a little difficult. My first true color is blue. So I just have this need to be around people and connect with people who do the same thing that I do. But yeah.
And Monica, you teach first grade. So that connection between you and your students is a little different than on the high school level. So how has it been for you not to be able to see all those little smiley faces every day?
Well, the first time we had a Zoom class meeting, I cried just seeing their faces and seeing how excited they were to just see everybody. We have weekly class Friday meetings on Zoom, and the kids, most of the time, they just want to talk. They just want to interact. They want to be able to talk to somebody outside their home and see faces and hearing their good mornings, and we had, you know, good morning greetings that we did that they could choose from and not having that every day. And those, I'm sure Nakia would say too, those light bulb moments when you see them, oh, I get it. And now you can't really see that. You hope that it's still happening, but you can't see that all the time. But with the little ones and even my daughter in first grade, they so anticipate and look forward to those Friday meetings that her class has and that we have, where it's not academic, it's just, let's talk, let's see how things are going. And they'd want to talk about anything and everything just to be able to talk and interact.
Since you don't see your students every day, how do you stay connected to them?
For mine, I use a couple of different avenues. I use Google Meet and Zoom throughout the week. So we have a weekly Wednesday where the students can actually check in to get assistance with their assignments. So if they have a question about the work that they're doing, they're struggling with a particular piece, they've read through the lesson, they've looked at the, you know, mini video or the tutorial, and they still need a little bit of guidance, we check in that way, and I just keep it open. It's almost like drop-in tutoring, where I'll sit there for about an hour, and then students know that they can hop on and ask a question, and then if they have to go, they're able to go. I record those sessions, and then I post them to my e-class page afterward, so any student who missed it still can access it if they are in need of that additional support in working through a particular assignment or lesson. And then on Fridays, like Monica said, we do just a Zoom meeting just to check in. How was your week? You know, are all of your assignments done? Did you see the announcements that came from administration or the counseling staff? And I've been doing a lot of sessions where the students are now anticipating what happens after high school. So they'll ask questions about college life, and they know that I worked at the university level for about 8 years. And so they'll ask questions about the admission process and orientation and registration and what that first semester is going to look like for them. And, you know, it's just kind of tips and advice on how to manage it.
So what type of trends are you seeing with your students? Are they doing as well as they were before schools were closed? Are they doing worse, about the same?
My students, most of them are doing about as well or better. I can tell the ones that are not doing as well, it's not because they're of digital learning, it's because they have strained family situations going on. And like Nakia said, just constant communication and knowing what's going on in these kids' lives outside of digital learning that can possibly affect their ability to do digital learning or their ability to do it well. But most of them are doing as well, if not better.
Nakia, what about your students?
Yeah, same. I think roughly 85% of my students are performing as well or better than they were before schools closed. And then for that other 15% of students who have either stayed in the same percentage area or have declined, it's a match to the students who may not have been as invested in their learning. I have a lot of students turning 18, and some of them just struggle academically. And, you know, they've made choices where if they're not going to graduate on time, they kind of feel like, you know, I don't really want to stress myself out with this particular class. I'll do my easier classes, and then I have to make classes up anyway. But it's definitely in line with the trends of what they were doing before school started.
Is the work students are doing now easier than what it was when they were in class every day?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily easier, but it's totally different. Yeah. It's different than anything we would have done in the classroom. Because in the classroom, when they're watching me teach, I can give them immediate feedback. I can immediately know who's getting it, who's not getting it, just sometimes by their facial reaction. But now I'm posting a teaching video of my team working together. So it's different first grade teachers, which they love hearing from. But I don't know unless they turn in a work assignment. And even then, and the first grade level, a lot of the parents are there to be able to help them. So I don't know how much help the parent gave to be able to do it. So it's different. I wouldn't say it's easier, though.
Yeah, I would agree with Monica. It's different. I designed my lessons to take students about 45 minutes to complete, which was the guideline that we were given, about half of what they would have to work on in a face-to-face scenario. And I tried to incorporate as many engaging pieces and give them opportunities for feedback either through e-class, or if I'm using a different learning platform, something like Actively Learn, incorporating surveys and quick questions just to get a good idea of what they're grasping from the content. And when I give them feedback, I do like that I can give them quick feedback. Mm-hmm. At the high school level, we're on a block schedule, so I often go 4 days at a time without seeing certain groups of students, depending mm-hmm. on what day it is of the week. And so with this platform, one of the benefits is that I can get them their feedback quicker outside of the classroom than I would on a routine day, because if they're turning in a paper and I grade it, it may be 4 days before they get that paper back and see how they did on it. But in e-class, I can give them immediate feedback on their responses and tell them what I'm looking for and things that they want to correct for next time. But I do agree with Monica that when you're engaged in a lesson, you know, and you're asking, activating questions and checking right then and there and determining how to differentiate instruction, that's the part that you miss. And you just can't do that with digital learning. It's difficult to do.
And I also understand you can actually see who is logged into the site, who's doing their homework, who isn't. And then you can address those that aren't doing their work.
Well, eClass will give you a report. You can search using the tools that are in eClass and check the last time students have logged in. You can look and see the last time they've accessed certain content, how much they've accessed certain content over the course of a few days. And then obviously for my students, when they're in assignments, if they haven't submitted work, then I can check there immediately to see who's turned in work and who hasn't. And I can follow up with that student either via phone call to the parent or via an email or even remind. You know, I'll hop on and send a remind message to the student and say, hey, I'm still missing this and you know it's due tomorrow. So do you have questions on it? Is there something I can help you with? Or are you just, you know, a little busy right now and you need to get it done later? And students will give me a very quick response if they're on top of it. And that's another way I can determine who may either be struggling or who may be feeling a little deflated or overwhelmed with their work and address it that way.
So students are being held accountable for their work.
Absolutely.
Oh, yes. They definitely are. And like Nakia touched on, the constant communication is the key to everything right now. Constantly knowing what's going on in their lives because we can't ask them at school anymore. And contacting the parents, emailing the parents, texting the parents, getting a counselor to also try and reach out. And there are some students, I don't have any, but I know of other teachers that do have some students that we have tried and tried and tried and tried and tried. And no matter how much we try, we can't get in touch with them, but we keep trying because we know that they still need to be held accountable. This isn't just free home time.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So you two are considered some of the more creative teachers out there in terms of how you're using the digital learning platform. So Monica, give me an example of a creative way you're using the platform, whether it's a creative assignment or a video or whatever you do to let the students know you're still around and you still care about them.
Our first grade team has really stepped up to the plate with how are we going to work together so it's not seven first grade teachers doing seven different things. Mm-hmm. And the students have loved watching our teaching videos that we post where it's different teachers teaching. And our assignments right now, because we're in that May time when normally at school we'd be doing all the fun end of year stuff. Yeah. And so our assignments are like your favorite first grade memory, because we always used to do memory books. And those are very meaningful to the students. And it's fun providing that feedback that Nakia was talking about in discussions and in assignments to say, oh, I remember that. That was so much fun. Our first grade students in themselves and their parents have really stepped up to anything that we have thrown at them that's been new. Before digital learning started, a lot of us used our eClass page more limited than what we're using it as now. And so as the teachers have learned, we've added new things, having first graders take quizzes and take pictures of their work to submit in assignments like the high schoolers are doing. And then even throwing Nearpod at them, let's try this, let's see how it works, what do you think? And getting that feedback from the kids makes them feel like they're helping us.
I would definitely agree that before digital learning began, I did not use eClass nearly as much as I do now. It was kind of a place where students could do, you know, extra tutorials. They could get some extra support with their academics so they could practice a little bit more on things. With teaching English literature and language arts, I'm so used to touching paper. You know, because when we're reading books, we like the smell of the book and to turn the pages and looking at the cover and all types of things with our pre-lessons. So I would primarily use eClass to support what we were doing in class. And if a student missed a class, they know they could go there to get caught up on what they missed out on. But now I've just found all of these different things that I could do with eClass. Mm-hmm. And even when we return back to the classroom, mm-hmm. you know, the goal is, okay, I'm going to keep with this. I'm going to make sure that the students are still doing this. I could use almost everything that I'm doing now. And even in the middle of a lesson, you know, throw, mm-hmm. have the students go over to eClass and switch back and forth. So it's been really helpful in finding ways to engage students. And some of the things that my team has done, and we have a pretty small team. There's 3 12th grade level English teachers. But our department chairs and my assistant principal have been so supportive and encouraging. And we've designed assessments where the students get to use video, mm-hmm. you know, and so we are working with what students have ready, what available, what they have access to. And then at the same time, something that they find fun, mm-hmm. you know, one of their assignments was doing an advice letter to a freshman, and they had to do it as a video. And a lot of the students threw on their cap and gown with their cords and, you know, their capes so they could do their video and really feel like they're in that moment. And that is a continuation of what we were doing with the students in school with their senior capstones. And so it was really rewarding to see them really take on that piece and take it seriously. Mm-hmm. And maximize that opportunity and say, you know, okay, you want a video? I'll give you a video. And I think they really enjoy it. And of course, you know, they love the praise. And when they post to the discussion board, their classmates can see it. And they can see, again, that immediate, like, this was amazing. I'm so proud of you. And I think that they get that sense of accomplishment. And I wholeheartedly agree with Monica that the students have really stepped up. They've really taken charge of their learning, and we were all a little concerned about them being self-starters mm-hmm. and understanding how to manage their time and not become overwhelmed, because about half of them have never taken an online class. You know, you have students mm-hmm. with that experience, but a lot of them, they don't know what that looks like. And at the college level, you have students who, when they take their first online class, it's really difficult mm-hmm. for them to be so disciplined and make sure that they're getting their assignments done and doing all of the pieces. So if anything, I think that this has been a really good preparation for students when they do venture into a realm where they may have to do something online. They've got that experience under their belt.
And I'm moving into a new position next year. This is my last year in the classroom, which has also made this very hard. I'm going to be an LSTC at my school next year.
Oh, wow.
So through this is perfect in-job training. Mm-hmm. And like Nakaya was talking about, hearing from other teachers that I've worked with through digital learning, not just my first grade team, and hearing them say, hey, I want to know how I can do this next year. I want to keep this up. I don't want to lose this momentum. And I think that this has been a great opportunity for teachers to see exactly what eClass can do and Google Classroom. Some are using Google Classroom, how they can work together.
Mm-hmm.
But it does make digital learning very hard right now with my little first grade babies and not being able to say goodbye to my last class.
That has to be tough for both of you, not being able to say goodbye to your students in person.
Yes.
But with that said, do either of you have an uplifting story that you can share from over the last couple of months that made you smile and let you know that you are making a difference, that you are reaching the kids?
Something that has made me smile and made me realize they are still learning, even in this crazy time we're living in. I had a group of 4 girls that before digital learning started, they had not done very well on a math test. And so I told the parents, hey, I'm going to be online. We're going to have some small group sessions. We're going to practice, and I'm going to create something in eClass for them to try again to improve their grade. And those were the times that I did get to see some of those light bulb moments that we had talked about. when I started to see we had reviewed time for 4 days now, on the fifth day, are you ready? Can you do it? And they start, oh, yeah, I can do it. And they were getting questions right, left and right, all correct. And it was like, oh, they are still learning. It was like a relief of, this is working. They are still learning something. It's not just your parents are doing it for you and guiding you through it. You are learning something through all of this. And then with this being Teacher Appreciation Week, our administration, and I'm sure they've done this at Central Gwinnett, but our administration has gone above and beyond. We all got yard signs in our yards, and some people live out in Jefferson, so they had to drive really far. But we got yard signs. Yesterday we did a drive-by lunch. You could go drive by, pick up a lunch and a teacher appreciation gift. It's actually where my husband is now, getting his gift from his school. And then I had a parent drop off, drove to my house, not close to them, drove to my house and dropped off flowers at my front door.
Oh, and it's, wow.
It's things like that that just make it all worth it.
Absolutely. I think my most heartwarming story is similar to Monica's, is seeing the light bulb moments. One thing that I've noticed about digital learning is that when you're in the classroom as teachers, we feel that we can keep, you know, all of the students engaged. Every now and then you'll have a student who will, you know, try to hide in the class amongst their classmates. You know, I'm not going to raise my hand to answer anything in discussion. But I have noticed that when we are on our Google Meets or our Zoom sessions, it's almost more intimate. You know, even if there are 20 other people on that particular session, they're more likely to speak up and they're more likely to say, okay, I have this question. You know, they'll ask a question via chat and I can respond to it, or they'll raise their hand and speak up. And then when we're explaining a piece of text or working through a particular assignment, they do. They have that light bulb moment. They're like, oh, okay, now I get it. You're like, that makes sense because, you know, the poet did this and they're trying to get this type of emotion out of you. So that's been great. And then again, with the advice letters and the opportunities for the students to do video recordings, I've loved seeing them share those pieces of their personality that they may not have felt as comfortable sharing in front of their students. You know, I tried all year to get the students to find their comfort zone with public speaking. And even up through March, there were still some students who would still break out into full panic about standing in front of their peers and speaking on a particular topic. But through video, they just come out of their shells and you get to see all of their personality and they'll say hi to you and I hope you're doing okay. Okay, I'm going to start my video, but I hope, you know, so that makes me feel like they feel loved on and cared for when they respond in that way versus, you know, kind of a thumbs up. Yeah, I got it. Or I understand. It's those moments where they actually take the time to connect back with you that are the most warming for me.
Given that everything is safe, are you looking forward to returning to the classroom in the fall?
Definitely.
Yes.
I think it's just natural human cravings to have face-to-face and be able to hug kids and hug each other, hug all of our friends that we haven't seen.
Yes.
I mean, outside of school, I've even had family Zooms and girls' night Zooms with my girlfriends, but it's just not the same.
Yeah.
And I want to be back where I can see all the little people in Nakia's case, the big people, running around and say hi and actually talk to them face to face and get those hugs. And we can't do that right now, and it's so hard. And so I think every teacher, even though our time with our family is precious right now, but we miss our kids. We miss them so much.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with Monica. And yes, time at home with family has been wonderful. But I think when you enjoy teaching, when you truly enjoy your job as a teacher, one of the things that comes with that is also that reward that you feel from one-on-one and face-to-face mm-hmm. interaction with your students, which was really the main reason that I never saw myself as doing any type of online teaching role as a profession. You know, when those types of opportunities were offered, I'm like, no, I need to see my students, you know. And this has been, it's a great experience. And I think even if we have to modify the way we work with students moving forward, being able to see them at least some part mm-hmm. of the week, you know, whatever our schedule looks like, I think it's beneficial for everyone all around. I think it helps to build that bond and build that school spirit, maintain that school spirit that you have and that camaraderie that you have with your colleagues.
Well, I want to thank both of you for the job you're doing and all you have done this year. If you look around the country, teaching and learning has stopped in many places, but not here in Gwinnett County. And that is a testament to the two of you, your peers, and of course, all the other people in our school district who support teaching and learning on a daily basis. Ladies, stand by though. We're gonna take one last break. But when we return, we're gonna bring back Dr. Patterson, and the three of you will take part in another edition of Did You Know?
Wash your hands! First you need some soap, then scrub for 20 seconds. If you don't have a clock near you, then sing the ABC song. Be sure to scrub front and back, under your fingernails, and between your fingers. Dry your hands with a clean towel or a paper towel. For more information, go to www.cdc.gov/cleanhands.
And we're back. We end every episode of Teaching Gwinnett with a segment called Did You Know? Did You Know is a series of multiple choice and or true or false questions about the school district that you have 2 minutes to answer.
Oh, good. Oh, exciting.
The hope is at the end of Did You Know, our listeners will have learned a few interesting facts about Gwinnett County Public Schools. Are you ready?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, here we go. Question number one. What year did GCPS launch the GCPS Foundation's Sports Hall of Fame? A, 2006, B, 2010, or C, 2012?
A, 2006.
That is incorrect.
I'm going to say B, 2010.
I'm going to go with Nakaya and say B.
Correct.
Yay!
Question number two. At the end of the 2018-2019 school year, 676 employees retired. True or false?
Oh, goodness. False.
Correct.
Yes.
514 people retired.
Wow. That's a lot.
Question number three. How many types of employees does GCPS employ?
Two. Those who teach.
And those that support teachers.
Get it, Monica.
Correct.
We're on a roll, Nakaya.
Question number four. During which of the following time periods did GCPS see its largest enrollment increase? A, 1997-98 to 1998-99. B, 2011-12 to 2012-13. Or C, 2004-2005. To 2005-2006.
I'm gonna go with B.
I'm gonna agree with Nakaya and say B.
That is incorrect.
Oh, darn it.
C.
That answer is correct. 9,235 students enrolled in GCPS between the 2004-2005 school year and the 2005-2006 school year.
Wow.
That's a lot.
Question number five. This is the hardest one.
All right, I'm ready.
Okay.
Does anybody need a little extra time to prepare themselves?
A little.
Yes.
Can I call a friend? Phone a friend?
This is not Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, so there will be no calls for help. You're on your own. Okay, question number five. Would you rather live without your cell phone or without television and music?
I would probably say television and music because I need to be able to talk to people, especially during quarantine when I can't go see them. I've got to be able to talk to people.
I'd rather live without my cell phone. The way you asked that question, the music piece would be too quiet, and I would rather choose music over the cell phone every day. TV, I could go without, but the music piece, I don't think I could.
I'm going to agree with Monica. I would rather go. It would be really hard for me because I love watching movies, but I'm going to say without television and music. Can you tell I'm struggling with this decision?
Great job, though, everyone, answering the questions, really giving us insight into how you think. So now it's time to calculate the results. And you all passed.
Thank you.
Yay!
Once again, I'd like to thank all of my guests for taking time out of their busy schedule to stop by the show and discuss digital learning. And that's going to do it for this edition of Teaching Gwinnett. You can find us on iTunes, the Apple Podcast app, Google Play Music, Spotify, the GCPS home webpage, and just about anywhere else podcasts are available. Please subscribe. Until next time, so long.